Okay, this is a Liberal Gladiator, and I want to thank everyone for tuning in to A Weight Off Your Shoulders, another edition. It is June 4th, 2019. I'm in my studio. I've got Scott Ormond, who finished the Leadville 100 and earned his belt buckle. And we're going to go and ask some questions from Scott about his experiences doing that. And then a little bit, a little bio. Scott, when you entered the Leadville 100, you had already had some distance training, some cardiovascular training, is right?
Yes, I have. Hi, Ed. Great to be here.
Great to see you, man.
I ran the Leadville 100 in 2013, and leading up to that, I trained for probably 2 years. I've raced at every distance in between 5K and 100 miles. So, yeah, it's a building process to get up to where you feel like you can physically as well as mentally survive a 100-mile running race.
Awesome, man. So do you feel like it's kind of like another brick in the wall that you're building every single workout and you've got something planned?
Yeah. As I was training for the Leadville 100, I remember one day, the first time I ever ran 10 miles, it felt like pure joy when I ran for 10 miles. And when I decided to take up running in my early to mid-40s, it was a sport that I admired greatly. It was a sport that I was least good at throughout my life, wasn't a great runner, and it was the sport that I was most afraid to do. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to try something that is really uncomfortable for me, and that was running. And I started training at, you know, at the 3, 4, 5 mile level. And as I continued training and competing, I found out that distance was my thing. Wasn't real fast in the short distances, but I could go a long time. And so that's what I did. I took up running in my mid-40s, and I haven't looked back ever since.
All right. Now, I remember a time before you were running.
Yes.
Yes, the trilobite comes back to life. The trilobite is going to take a bite.
Yeah. I spent most of my adult life in my 30s and early 40s right around 195 pounds. And I remember one of my clients at work, I had this kind of giant stomach going, and he smacked me in the stomach, and he says, "What's this?" It was some tough love. I said, you know, I work a lot. I, you know, have problems.
Oh, come on, Scott.
I
need some prenatal care, man.
And that inspired me a little bit. And I decided, you know what, I don't want to spend my life overweight and inactive, which I had done for, you know, well over 10 years. And I decided, okay, I'm going to do this sport that's uncomfortable for me, which is running. And, you know, I've been able to maintain a weight of right around 160. Once I lost that weight, I got from 195 down into the 150s, and now I'm maintaining a weight right around 160.
All right, fantastic. And just when you think that someone thinks about, like, you know, weight loss of that sort, how do you feel compared to, I mean, right now today, even though you're older, compared to how you were when that guy decided to, you know, smack you in the and that extra area where body mass accumulates?
Yeah, you know, running at 195 pounds is much different than running at 160 pounds. That's 35 extra pounds you're hauling around. It feels better to be lighter, you know, and you'll notice that most quality marathon runners are weighed down around 125, 130.
And that's guys.
That's guys.
Yeah.
Exactly. Running for me has been something that has created energy in my life. I feel much better in my skin when I have an endurance workout each day. So I try to be very consistent to have endurance workouts. And what it does for me is it creates energy in my life. It helps me feel good in my body, right? So when I was bigger and non-active, I felt tired. I felt like, you know, I couldn't move that well. Now, if I can get a workout in during the day, particularly an endurance workout where I get my heart beating and my blood flowing, I feel good in my body. I feel my energy is right. Like right now, I feel really good in my body.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because I got to have an excellent road bike ride in earlier today, which is something I do for cross training. I rode my bike from my house in Aspen up to Maroon Bells, enjoyed the scenery and the sights, and rode home. But I'm trying to get my heart beating. I'm trying to create that energy in my life through endurance exercise.
Okay. Now, do you use a fitness tracker?
Yes, I do. I track several things. When I run, I like to track my heartbeats per minute, which, depending on the type of workout I'm trying to execute, I like to follow the program of you take 180 beats minus your age, which would be the top of your aerobic level, right? So I'm 52. When I run, I try to keep my heartbeats at around 128, 130. And I track that using a Garmin watch.
Okay.
Using a heart rate strap, which now a lot of the watches that beats per minute is built into the watch, so you
yes.
don't need the strap. But I'm kind of old school. I use the strap, and I monitor that. I also monitor my steps per minute.
Okay.
A lot of times runners will take too few steps per minute. You know, they're,
so in other words, they're overstriding.
Overstriding, exactly. So take shorter steps and take more of them versus overstriding and kind of loping along.
Right. Yeah. So do you find that there's an increased mechanical efficiency when you're doing that by taking smaller steps? And so, in other words, your the length of the arc doesn't have your feet and heels rising up quite as high by taking shorter steps, because that up and down movement is not, you know, doesn't help you go forward.
Yes, exactly. As a runner, you're always seeking after more and more efficiency, right? What is the number of steps you need to take for the speed you're going? I like to have a little bit of forward lean, right? So it's a controlled fall, and I am constantly trying to encourage myself to take more steps per minute, which I think is more efficient, which most runners feel is more efficient. So a top marathon runner is going to take about 180 steps per minute, right? If not more. It's difficult for me to get to that number, but so I'm constantly trying to encourage myself to shorten my stride a little bit and take more steps.
Okay. Now, let me ask you, what kind of mileage were you doing in preparation for that 2013 Leadville 100?
Great question, Ed. I have a tendency to not think so much about mileage, but more about time on my feet.
Okay, that's actually really good to hear. So, for the audience, try to explain why the subtle difference in terms of that perspective, in terms of you looking at it from that angle, as opposed to like what I just said, which is what most people would go into, you know, what kind of mileage are you doing?
Right. So say it's easier on the brain for me and for most people to say, I'm going to go out and do a run for 90 minutes or a run for 2 hours, versus saying, I'm going to go run 15 miles right now. you might go, oh, that's a long way. But if you think, hey, I'm going to go run for two and a half hours, that's easier on your brain. And also, I'm not thinking about mileage so much because I want to do quite a bit of hill work when I'm training. And a lot of times when you are doing hill work, depending on the pitch of the hill, you may be power hiking, right? You don't always want to run. So say you're, I do mountain climbing in Aspen, and you know, I call it hiking with a purpose, or hiking like you have somewhere to go.
Awesome. So it's like a destination-oriented kind of thing, a mission or mission-oriented.
Mission-oriented, right. Okay. And if I'm hiking up a hill and I can achieve the heartbeat that I'm after, which is, you know, right around 130 beats per minute, because I'm in, you know, I'm 52 years old. Someone who's 30 may want to achieve a heartbeat of 150 or 155. And that would be, you know, at an aerobic level. There are some workouts where you want to run hard and get into an anaerobic level. That would be another 20 beats per minute on top of that. So for me right now, if I want to go anaerobic or I want to run hard, I'm trying to get my heartbeats up into the mid-150s, maybe 160. And but, you know, a young man, it's nice being young because, you know, you can sustain a heartbeat, you know, a good athlete up in the 170s, 175. And I can't do that anymore because of age, but if you're in your 20s and 30s, you got youth on your side. It's nice.
Oh, those young people. It's wasted on them.
Right.
You hear me, young people? We're two old guys in this studio, and we'll outrun you.
Right. But to your question, Ed, mileage, I think more in terms of hours. And if I'm climbing a mountain, right, I'm happy to be on my feet and to be working hard versus just running on a flat surface to where you're just trying to bang out miles.
Okay, so in other words, you know, since we're, you know, speaking locally here, you want to go out and do some, you know, trail running and things of that sort, so you have uneven pitches, different kinds of scenery, different kinds of, you know, ground texture, different environments. You know, maybe sunny, maybe shady, trees, no trees, rocks, things that make it a little bit more technical than just running on, say, the Rio Grande Trail, which has mild pitch changes, but I mean, they're there, but it's really pretty negligible.
Yeah, for sure. And I like to vary my workouts as much as possible. I don't mind running on the road, running on pavement. I like all types of running. I like all different distances. It gives me a chance to really feel inside my body. And, you know, as you are in a workout or in a race, you constantly need to monitor, can I go faster? Should I go slower? Am I running out of energy? Do I need to drink water? Are my steps per minute proper right now? What's the pitch of the land I'm on? Monitoring if you're on a trail, you know, where you're going to place your foot so you don't hurt yourself or fall down.
Would be a disaster, I would imagine, out in some of that wilderness.
I've fallen down several times, and believe me, it's something you don't want to do. And it's not the rock that's sticking up that's going to get you, you know, 3 or 4 inches. Mm-hmm. It's the one that's up just a little bit that you don't quite notice, and maybe you're getting lazy with your heel lifting back, you mm-hmm. know, you're not lifting your feet enough, so your foot catches this rock that is maybe an inch high, right? And then you start finding yourself falling forward, and it seems like time almost stands still as you're falling forward, and you're looking for a nice place to smash your face. And you know, so falling's awful, but once you do fall, you start taking inventory of what's going on in your body. Are my sunglasses broken? Am I bleeding anywhere? Have I hurt my ankle or my knee or my face? And, you know, fortunately, I've taken inventory. I'm a pretty good faller. And if you're a good faller, you get up and you start running again.
All right, so you're structurally sound.
Structurally sound. You got it, Ed.
Very good, man. Now, some of the stuff here I'm going to ask you, you know, maybe a little more technical. Obviously, you're familiar with running repeats. What are the shortest repeats that you do in your training today? And then what were the shortest repeats that you were doing in 2013?
Yeah. So,
actually, we should just explain what repeats are. Go ahead.
Repeats would be where you pick a distance of, say, 200 meters or 400 meters. 400 meters would be basically a quarter mile. You could do repeats of a half mile, repeats of a mile. When I was training for Leadville, I would like to do 1 mile repeats. And I had a trainer that would run with me. And I remember we were on the basalt track doing 1 mile repeats one day. And he's a fabulous runner, right? My trainer. I'm not so good. I just try hard. And we were doing 1 mile repeats at an 8 minute pace. And he says, "All right, you know, we got to pick it up a little bit, pick it up." And I said, "Zeke, I am working my butt off over here." And he goes, "Yeah, that's the point. You need to be doing that." And I said, "This is really uncomfortable." And he said, "Well, a big part of running is getting comfortable with the uncomfortable." And right. I took that as a really nice lesson. You have to go to places that are not comfortable in your body, paces that aren't comfortable, and then you have to figure out a way to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. And when it comes to ultra running, you need to be uncomfortable for long periods of time. And so, and that's one thing that I get out of running is that a lot of people these days just seek after comfort, right? Which is sitting on a couch, yes, eating macaroni and cheese, watching TV, you know, taking warm showers, sleeping in as long as you can. You're just seeking after being comfortable with everything in your body. And running is a reminder to me and to anybody who does it that life is suffering, right? We're not here just to seek after comfort. We are here to find places where we're uncomfortable and figure out a way to get comfortable with it.
All right. Now, I remember back in 2012, you and I were doing some track work, and we're running 200-meter sprints, and we were doing a 2 or 3 mile run immediately afterwards. And and remember how we both remarked, I said, "Wow, these 200s are more uncomfortable than the 3 mile or 2 mile runs."
Right.
And so, you know, for the audience, you know, go ahead, if you could explain in your own words as an, you know, an ultra distance runner, why that's important that you feel, and you went into that, but there's also that speed component in a 200 that pushes things. And so you become somewhat more mechanically efficient because you run what I call running smaller, and you're more planar in your movements as opposed to a lot of torquing and twisting.
Yes.
Which is uses up a lot of energy.
Yeah. Speed work is very important, I think. I think you can get a lot out of running hard and running fast for your own body for a shorter period of time versus going for a jog for a long period of time. So if you don't have much time to work with during your day, and you may choose to do a speed workout, right, where you get your heart up to its anaerobic level, and like you said, you can do 200 repeats, you can do 400 repeats, and it is I find it's a killer workout to really get the heart beating, and to, even if it's for 30 or 40 minutes, that can still be a very effective, good workout. That could be almost as effective or as effective as, say, a 2 hour run or a 2 hour bike ride. In my opinion, you should vary the type of workouts you have. You need to, I like to cross train on a road bike. I like to throw some speed work in when I can. And, you know, my specialty in running is going slow for a long period of time. I'm a little bit scared of running fast. So I have to continually tell myself, Don't be scared of running hard. Don't be scared of running fast. And once you are able to execute that and get your heart rate up, you won't regret doing that. So speed work is very important, and it's very good for your body to get your heart rate up for shorter periods of time.
So that, so for people who are maybe avid gym goers, it's roughly the equivalent of a high-intensity intervalized training workout.
Yes.
Okay. And so when you're in the midst of, of going into a speed workout, what's the highest that your heart rate ever goes?
Right now, 174.
Okay, so you actually have that exact number, and you know that's kind of like a an objective or a cap, if you will. Okay, you don't want to go too much above that.
Yeah, I will run as hard as I can during a speed workout, and you know, towards the end, I lean into the finish and I look at my watch. And if I can get it up to, you know, high 160s, low 170s, I feel like I've accomplished something good. And then once you get it up to that level, bring that heart rate back down as soon as possible to where you can get it down, I would say, to maybe 110, mm-hmm. 105. And then when it comes down to that level there, you can go at it again and try and get that heart rate right back up to the mid to high 160s or into the 170s. But that's just for me, for my own particular age.
Yeah, everyone is specific, and that's one thing that, that's, Scott, you're addressing the specificity of the person doing the exercise, right?
Right.
Okay,
right.
Cool. And I wanted to ask you also about the situation when you're doing that kind of training, you know, more of the speed training. How important vasodilation is in your vascular system. So when you pump it up, your heart rate goes really, really high, and you've warmed up, then you kind of settle things down. And then it, at least in my body, I've noticed that that it's a lot harder once I've warmed up and then brought it down to then bring it back way to the stratospheric heights. Do you see any evidence of that powerful vasodilative effect when you're doing speed work? Like, let's say if you were doing 800 meter intervals or repeats, okay? Let's say you've done 10 of them, which would be I would kill myself.
Woo!
All right, let's
That's
say
you, Ed, okay. Not me. That's you.
Okay, let's say we're gonna do six of them. All right, you got six 800 meter repeats in your popping each one around 3 minutes or so. I would imagine I would pop maybe 3:30 in your situation. You know, how do you notice how if your first effort has a much higher heart rate, and then maybe the second or third or significantly lower, and then it starts creeping back up again? Have you noticed that at all?
Not too much. I think you're right. It is. In the beginning, for me, running in the beginning of a workout, that's when it's hardest, when your body is getting warmed up, right? And you can, and it's, you feel like, you know, I'll go out on a run and I'll be a quarter mile into it going, man, oh, my body is not quite responding yet. And you have to fight through that first quarter mile or half mile to where your body realizes, okay, we are doing a workout here.
Okay. So in other words, you feel like your blood is sludge.
Yeah.
You've got right. Molten lead in your legs and molten steel in your lungs.
Right.
All right.
So let me make one point for the listening public. The hardest part for me, and it may be a hard part for your average person, is the beginning, right? The desire to get out there and get a workout in, right? So I try to plan my day around, I'm going to wake up in the morning. I want to get my workout in as soon as possible, right? And just, you're not always going to feel like doing it. You're not always going to feel like a run or a bike ride or whatever you like to do. What you got to do is force yourself to get out that door, get started, and your body is going to change as you exercise. You're going to feel better and better, and you are never going to regret going out and doing a workout once it's over.
All right. Super, super quick, because we're about to end here. But maybe 20 seconds on diet. Do you eat as you please, or do you tune your food to what you're going to do?
I do. One thing I like to do now is intermittent fasting, right? To where I can teach my body to work off the fat that it has. If it doesn't have carbohydrates to burn, then it has to go towards fat. I like to try to become a fat burner.
Okay.
I use carbs in my diet. I'm a meat eater. And so try to keep it clean.
Scotty, thank you so much for coming in. We've got Pulse of the Planet coming up right now.